Pat, welcome on the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's good to be on this side for once. Feels pretty special.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to a good chat.
I'm very humbled that you joined me today. And I want to open by stating very clearly that probably of all the people in my Bitcoin journey and my podcast journey specifically as part of that, you have helped. And for those that don't know Pat, Pat helps me on the production side of things and will probably have listened to more of my podcasts than anyone else. So forgive me if I've got boring, Pat, but no, you've been an incredible help. So thank you very much.
You are most welcome. You know, it's a two-way street. It's been great for me as well. I've stuck around. I've really enjoyed these podcasts and there's definitely a lot of value that I've soaked up through them. It's pretty incredible. The guests you've had on. Yeah, it's been great, man, from my perspective as well.
It is mad, isn't it? The kind of people that I've been able to have conversations with and learn from. Like when you start from zero with nothing, no one has a clue who you are. It's kind of crazy how, you know, you can organize video calls with people anywhere in the world. So Pat, okay, so to start with, what I want to do is we'll talk about podcast production and stuff as the conversation goes, but you caught my attention recently because you did something called a dopamine detox. So let's start there. What the hell is a dopamine detox and why did you do it?
Yeah, sure. It's called a dopamine detox or a dopamine fast. And the basic premise is you need to reset your dopamine system or you attempt to improve your dopamine system by fasting, by staying away from all sorts of things. I noticed this year, maybe midway through this year, that it's hard to explain. It's hard to express all these things, but it was like I had the energy, but I didn't have the bother almost. Like I would find some free time. I'd have done this. I'd have done that. Maybe it was a bit of a grind. Maybe it was a better day than others. Maybe it was a tougher day. And then you get that free time. It's like, okay, what should I do now? And I look at this, I look at a book and I say, no way. I do not feel like reading a book. And I look
I've got part of them downstairs. You're like, oh, nah, that's the last thing I feel like doing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of this tricky place between motivation and like the desire to effort almost. Now, look, I'm not a scientist. I better say that straight away. But I did a little bit of research on dopamine because I thought this might be a potential answer to, I guess, the friction or the resistance that I was feeling.
Okay.
And yeah, I did a bit of research and I thought maybe this is for me and I came across dopamine fasting. So I've written everything down. Perhaps I'll start with what are some of the causes for declining dopamine or a burnt out dopamine system, right? So of course, as you can imagine, recreational drugs, alcohol, cigarettes are very damaging to dopamine. Stress, poor sleep, junk food, not enough exercise, not enough sun, excessive screen time, all that blue light, excessive music even, and combinations of these things makes them even worse. So you can imagine I was there with a soda in my hand, intense video game blasting with the music going.
Yeah.
You know, day after day, it ground me down and I didn't really realize what it was. So I went ahead and I took a plunge and I tried a dopamine fast. I had tried before. I couldn't even do 24 hours.
Wow.
So previously I had locked up my laptop. I locked up the TV remote. I locked up my phone.
Literally with like a key, you threw it
everything
away.
I could. Well, I just put it in the luggage. I just put it in some luggage and zipped it up. And I said, I'm not allowed to touch that. But, you know, even with doing all the house chores and I had activities, I had things to think about, things to write, I had stuff to do. It was still pretty crazy difficult. Like I can't quite express what it's like.
Like an addiction.
I mean, I suppose it is, right? If you keep pumping up your dopamine, then your brain becomes addicted to that.
Mm.
Yeah. So that was a fail. And I thought, I'm going to try this a bit more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very brave. I went for 2 days. I wrote down a list of rules and I was like, I'm going to do this for 2 days and I'm going to feel so much better. I kept saying, you know, oh, the benefits are going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be jumping out of my shoes. I'm going to be like loving reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is a bit of a warning to everybody out there who thinks they could jump into a 2-day dopamine fast, but let me lay down the rules first.
Yeah.
So no drugs, no TV, no radio, no apps allowed on the phone, no junk food, no work, no music, no podcasts, no social outbursts I put down because I anticipated I would become very like wanting to reach out and just have something to do. If I allowed like a messaging app, then I'd like jump on that, be messaging my brother and stuff like that. No coffee, pretty easy, and no FAP, which is a challenge in itself if anybody's ever tried that, or maybe people don't know, but to the guys out there, you know, there's something else I recommend looking into. And I booked myself 2 full days away. I went down there, and the afternoon of when I arrived, I started in the afternoon and, you know, just went down to the beach, had a walk around. I was thinking, you know, this is all right. This is going to be okay. Feeling confident. And then, oh gosh, I think that's when I got back to my room and I still didn't feel like doing anything. That was probably the hard part, is I didn't, still didn't feel that motivation to do anything. No music was very strange. I listened to music, you know, all the time. I think I had some crazy, I wish I remembered that my Spotify played them out. It was like 80,000 minutes in the year or something, you know, the Spotify Wrapped.
Yeah, I know the kind of the year end, your top listen to or whatever, but I've never looked at the amount.
Yes. Wow. Okay. So I think it was something crazy. Can't recall exactly. Maybe 80,000 is a bit short. But making dinner, just silence, just traffic noise out the window. So that was a bit weird on the first night. And I'm thinking, this is going to be tough, but I'm going to force myself through it. I know it's going to be difficult, but I think on the other side, it's going to be worth it. And I checked the time. After all this, I checked the time and it was like 4:30, 5 o'clock. And the nerves just started hitting me. The anxiety, the nerves started hitting me. So I thought, oh my God, what am I going to do? I've got to save things for tomorrow. I have to save activities. So I wrote down things like write a list of activities to do, that sort of level of like planning tasks to plan tasks, just to have things to do. And I went to bed at about 6:30, just tried to sleep and just tried to get to that first stage, just started getting going. Technically did a huge sleep in, slept through my alarms. So I thought I was off to a good start. And you know, got up, had breakfast, and no music or anything was very strange to me still. It felt a little bit weird. There was sort of like an emptiness, almost like a longing that I was feeling. And I went down to the beach. I had a swim, you know, did some writing, did some thinking, did a meditation, had lunch, and checked the time again, 1 p.m. And I started freaking out. I was just like, how am I going to get through today, let alone...
And that at that point is roughly 24 hours?
Yeah, that's correct. I suppose so. Yeah. So then, you know, I started getting these attacks in that afternoon. I was just like...
Wow.
trying intense, to find the motivation to... Trying to find the motivation to, like, you know, plan stuff, write stuff, meditate and read this book. And time was dragging like crazy. I was thinking, this is nuts. And the attacks were like in my chest. It was like anxiety mixed with, I'm not very good at like labeling all these, but anxiety mixed with like almost like feeling trapped, because I was just in this little apartment and I couldn't like go anywhere or do anything. And almost like a bit of loneliness as well, I would say, mixed in there. But these attacks would come and I have to just...
Wow.
Like that sort of intense. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And they were happening, you know, every 10 minutes.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it continued in this way, reading a book, meditate, cook dinner, just trying to get through it. And I think it was like 4 o'clock and I started counting, you know, if I go to sleep at 6 p.m., I'm probably going to wake up at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's not going to work. So I have to go to sleep at like 7:30 and that'll get me through. So what am I going to do until 7:30? And, you know, it started raining, so I didn't really want to go outside. I mean, I probably could have, but it seemed a bit depressing.
Suitably depressing.
Yeah.
Cue rainfall.
because before that, I had a nice view. I could actually just like sit there and stare at the view for a while. And so that night I was thinking, oh my God, how am I going to do another 24 hours of this? I've gone through my activities. I just can't see myself doing it. I started freaking out a little bit more. And honestly, that's when I bitched out. That's when I said, you know, one day is a good start. I'll be proud of myself if I could do one full day. And yeah, I changed my reservation on the Airbnb and I planned to get out of there at 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah, you were down.
And it's funny because once you cave in like that and you say, no, I'm getting out of here at 8:30 in the morning, it changes. Your internal mindset, everything sort of shifts a little bit. It becomes a lot easier.
Mm.
But in the same way, I felt like, oh, maybe I could. Maybe if I really, really tried and I sucked it up, maybe I could. But I'd already made the plans to bounce.
Because you presumably had to get your Airbnb app up on your phone to change the reservation, at which point you've broken your rule. Right. Yeah.
I forgot to mention that. Sorry. So out there by myself, for safety reasons, I thought I'm not just going to turn my phone off. Right. Mm. So I kept a messaging app and I kept the Airbnb app just in case they were like, there's a fire, get out.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the phone app on my phone were the only ones that were allowed through the screen time. On, if you're an Apple user, you set up screen time on your phone and you say, these are the apps that are allowed through the screen time. And everything else is locked out. So I wouldn't say that failed me with the dopamine detox. I would say that was just...
No, that was part of the parameters. Excuse me, I didn't understand that.
No, I should have mentioned it.
Pat, if I may, and is there anything else you'd like to add to that in terms of the experience?
Let me check my notes because I wrote everything down the day after thinking we would discuss it.
Mm.
And...
Well, it was something that I was very interested to learn about. I mean, I've never tried it myself. So, and this is what I also love is primary research. Like, what have you actually done? And teach me about it. Sorry, yes. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
I guess I come with a warning. You know, it sounds so simple. It sounds really easy. It sounds like, that seems like a really good thing to do. I'm going to try that. It is harder than it seems. I mean, I think I have a fair bit of discipline. I'm not the most disciplined person ever, but I can sit through a cold shower. I can stare at a wall for I don't know how long, but this was really trying me.
Interesting. Okay. And so, Pat, what is dopamine?
It's the neurotransmitter that not only helps you sort of track time and have like this perception of time, it's also... It's like a motivator. I mean, I'm kind of speaking out of school here, but it's to do with drive and motivation. When you are disciplined and you achieve something, it's released. It's kind of like a reward chemical in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm not sure. People have to do their own research.
How's it become something that you're interested in?
So how did I sort of come across it? Yeah. I can't really remember. It was years and years ago. I'm a generalist, which is really bad. I'm going to say that as well. I mean, if people tell me it's bad. I know it's bad, but I am. I like learning from all sorts of
people. Be who you are, mate. Be who you are.
I soak in all this knowledge. So dopamine, I don't know. I came across it years ago. You pick up bits here and there.
Okay. So what came to mind for me when you were telling that story is some examples that have cropped up in my life as well. And again, I'm not down the dopamine rabbit hole. I've never tried a dopamine detox like you explained. But I've fasted with no food, for example. So I've
How long did you go for?
48-hour fast, so just water for that period.
Yeah,
that was a fascinating experience. Day one, much, much harder than day two. And I've heard of some fantastic stories of people doing water fast for up to like 5, 6, 7 days in relation to cancer and other type of disease that they're trying to use holistic approaches to manage. And I had a chiropractor once who was teaching me about the fight or flight response in humans, and essentially the average human today has so many trigger points in any one 24-hour period that we're just completely drowning in fight or flight. And so he described it to me as you've got, you know, like a traffic light. You've got your red light, your amber light, and your green light. Historically, and how we were built biologically, if a saber-toothed tiger walked into the camp, you either kill it or you run as fast as you can, right? Which is obviously the ultimate fight or flight kind of example that's given. And essentially how we're built hasn't changed, but the environment that we live in has. And so where our bodies really struggle is that we wake up in the morning and the first thing we do is we've got a smartphone in our face. And that smartphone is giving you notifications all day long with addictive apps on them, right? Even your email is built like a game, right? And that's by design. And all these obviously then social media platforms, et cetera, that are monetizing attention, they want to keep you there as much as possible. But it's not just that. It's like, I'm going to jump in the car and I'm going to drive at 100 kilometers an hour to a location with all these different hazards on the way there that you have to manage. And I can't remember what the statistic was. We'll have to look it up. But basically, the average human experiences thousands of saber-toothed tiger moments every single day. And what that means is that we're constantly running on amber. And so you then have the parasympathetic nervous system, which is very important for rest and digest. And if you've got digestive issues, for example, it's very often the case that you just never get into a parasympathetic state. And if you imagine a nature documentary, the cheetah is, you know, creeping up and suddenly starts to attack the gazelle, and the gazelle or whatever it is, it shits itself, right? All the energy that that animal has goes into fucking getting out of there. And digestion is literally the last thing on its mind. And it's the same thing with humans. So all these people walking around with irritable bowel syndrome, it's because we're all stuck in this situation of like, basically get the fuck out of here or kill the saber-toothed tiger because of an iPhone or because of a set of traffic lights. And what you've described is kind of similar to this kind of state you're talking about. It's like we're just drowning in all these notifications and never take any spare time. And so that's why the water fast is so interesting. I've had a friend do a silent retreat. I mean, God, like at least you could like, maybe you can write on a silent retreat, but you were there on your own. So you didn't have anyone to talk to, right?
That's right. Wow. Yeah.
Does any of that resonate first?
You were saying all that and I was like, oh, there's something I want to say. the best thing you do is just listen and then see where you end up. So
yeah.
In summary, man, I think that's really interesting that these IBS people and perhaps even a fair few other conditions, if they weren't so stressed out of their mind and if their dopamine systems weren't so wrecked, maybe their parasympathetic would be a bit healthier. And yeah, that's interesting.
And so having done your dopamine detox, what were the main things you learned from it?
Oh, the day after, Jake. We didn't even talk about the day after.
Oh, okay, go on. Tell me.
So another word of warning for people who are thinking about doing this is the day after, it's so easy to just trash your dopamine straight away. So I did a little bit of research again. I wrote down things like no music on day one. I think I put no music and other activities at the same time or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
No junk food, no coffee, and ease my way back into it. If you slam on the accelerator and you flood yourself with dopamine again, you just undid all that hard work.
Mm.
So I guess, you know, I think people
should. So does that mean that it's beneficial,
but I would approach it with a certain degree of caution and respect.
Okay.
And do the research as well.
And so, Pat, so how do you design your day now?
And It's the same.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I see it as not recovering from a total burnt out wreck of a car, but instead improving the engine and maybe like putting the windows up and actually continuing on
more comfortable,
almost the same. But it was more of like an improvement than a rescuing. I think maybe if I did 2 days, if I got through 2 full days, I would have noticed like double the benefits and I probably would have been like, I rescued my dopamine system. But
okay.
Yeah, I would say that my life is the same.
Wow. And have you ever looked at, it'll come to me in a minute, something my wife was working on. I'll ask you a different question. The situation that it reminds me of is like at nighttime, sitting on the sofa, watching TV and being on your phone.
That's two times the dopamine at once, right?
Yes.
So you combine
and
that
it's
with
highly
like
addictive,
a block of chocolate,
right?
A block of chocolate on your knee.
Yep.
And you're at 3 times the dopamine. It is highly addictive because you you're either improving your dopamine with things like sauna, cold exposure, meditation, all of these sort of discipline activities that you know are good for you. Your brain actually rewards you for doing them. So you can boost your dopamine that way. And there's people out there trying to fully optimize their dopamine and like be maximum efficiency.
Well, I do like this kind of biohacking stuff. It's interesting.
Yeah. That's why I'm into it as well. The biohacking. Yeah. Like do you take any do you have a nootropic stack?
Currently no, but it has been something I had in the past. I go in waves. I'm normally, the most recent example is I did a parasite cleanse at the start of this year. Jeez. And so for about 2 weeks, I was on a certain type of natural supplementation. So I was taking a bunch of pills with each meal, some before, some after, with ingredients like oregano and stuff. So I had these little pills of oregano. You pop them in and you kind of start burping oregano a bit afterwards. And that was the first 2 weeks. And then the second 2 weeks is more of a... as a separate type of cleanse for the, again, taking like antiparasitics and stuff. And then the final kind of 2 to 4 weeks is then a rest and repair. So you start taking like a powdered form, like a gut repair type supplement and equally probiotics. But if I'm really honest, I get to a point where I'm like, enough. And I just cut them all out and I stop taking them. My wife would be a better person to ask because she's got a whole fucking wardrobe of these things. I mean, our house is stuffed full of all sorts of different stuff.
Yeah, interesting. I'm very similar.
We also like homeopathics as well. They're very helpful.
Yeah, okay, interesting. I'm very similar in the way that I like have a whole bunch of vitamins I'm taking. I take the 60 in the bottle or whatever, and I'm like, yeah. Oh, I'm good for a while. A few months later, I'll take them again.
But I think that's where I'm learning that your body knows best. So it's very intuitive. You can literally almost like, I feel like water. You hold a water bottle that you drink. Like you look in the fridge and you're like, that Floramyces 3000 fucking whatever probiotic, like, nah, I don't need that.
And, well, that and being said, I would also say, I think it's really important that people get a blood test.
Mm.
Go to your GP. If you've never had a blood test before, you don't know what's going on. You could be deficient in X, Y, Z. You could be feeling so much better. So my advice to people is go get a blood test from your GP and just say, I want to check for everything.
I've got the referral letter and I just haven't been.
So you've, yeah, never, it's had interesting. A, you've never had a blood test?
No. I've had a bunch over the years. But more recently, I wanted to go and get one just to kind of do a kind of checkup and see where we were at. And I remember now what my wife was talking about was adrenals. Have you ever checked for adrenal fatigue?
No, but I'm sure I don't have it.
Yeah, well, you could.
So probably like F1 drivers get
but
that.
But you might, though. I mean, my wife's now had 3 kids and is suffering from adrenal fatigue. You can see it in the blood tests. Inevitably, like, you know, pregnancy, labor, childbirth, breastfeeding, like exhausting, no sleep at nighttime or lack of. But I think in relation to what you were discussing with dopamine, I bet dopamine and adrenals are very closely related. And the story I was thinking of as well was like that example of someone sitting on the sofa, watching TV on their phone, eating chocolate. When I used to work as a broker, the amount of incoming and outgoing information channels in a busy trading window, SMS, WhatsApp, email, mobile phone, landline, a desk of people shouting. And also there was then like bespoke kind of messenger apps that you could use, like Yahoo Messenger was one for a bit. And then there was MSN for a bit. Basically, wherever your customer was, you could go and find them somehow. But you had like all these different ways of being told stuff. Plus then you had internal databases, plus then you had, you know, whatever. And you basically had to distill all this information and figure out like what's happening and help your customer try and do the deal they needed. But like, that's a dopamine fucking hellhole. And at the end of it, if you have a good day, you could have potentially made thousands of dollars. And obviously you could have a shit day and you could have missed thousands of dollars. But it's literally like, that idea of the saber-toothed tiger. I mean, they're coming at you everywhere. And that was work. And you go, wow. And then you go and get drunk. Like, geez.
And you'll find they're all compensating for all that stress and all that dopamine.
Well, I mean, that's why we used to go
detraction.
Drinking. Yeah, because you're absolutely burnt after an afternoon of doing that. And then you go out with your customer and get drunk. And then you wake up the next day and do it all over again. It's crazy, to be honest.
So the afternoon of that first day, I did notice, like, I'm having a lot less friction sitting here writing just in silence.
Okay.
Having a lot less friction, picking up this book and reading four chapters, and it was even just the one day seemed to make
something.
Does that
mean that your concentration had improved?
It does improve your focus.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
But you didn't solve the problem which you wanted, which was the, it's almost like motivation.
It did. I would say that I just needed to do the 2 days.
Yeah.
I think if I stuck through the 2 days, I would have had way more of an impact.
Okay.
But it was still worth it.
Would you like to do something like that again?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Maybe next time because even a silent retreat, it's like you can't talk, but you can probably sit.
Silent retreats, they almost scare me. Like people who go to those meditation retreats where they just meditate for 30 days, like that scares the shit out of me. I don't think I could do that. I don't know how they do it. And they always tell the story of like, yeah, it was really hard and I just started crying, but I had to meditate. So I was like just crying, meditating.
Yeah. Okay. It's so true, isn't it? But then like open minds, like you wouldn't end up in this kind of biohacking type conversation if you didn't have that. You know, if you just would listen to the GP, then you'd be munching on whatever prescription drugs they want to sell you and sitting on the sofa at home, not doing any exercise and eating garbage. Pat, so I'm intrigued. One last question, I think, maybe around the health stuff, and we'll move on to podcasting. But has this been a long journey for you, like looking into these types of things? Have you played around with your diet? Were you sick in the first place? What got you into this line of thinking?
I've always been pretty health conscious. It's not one of those things you learn in an afternoon. You have to pick it up over years.
Diet itself
is probably a 100-hour journey. I think I look after my diet pretty well, but you know, you get sick of it and you go on these holidays and you just eat whatever you want and you have to climb back into the diet again. But in terms of neurotransmitters and dopamine, I'm not really like fully down that rabbit hole or anything. But we all have dopamine and it is a really important aspect of daily function. People don't really realize.
Well, it's something that I want to go and learn about. I'm sure that Mike Dunworth, shout out to Mike, who actually is going to come on the show in a couple of weeks' time. He sent me a book at some point about dopamine and I never read it. So like people open the door to conversations and to ideas. And this is another moment where it's like, oh no, now it's time. I should go and find that book and read about it. Because it's obviously something that's valuable to understand and then to manage, essentially. I'm going to rewind the clock slightly. And I remember tweeting something along the lines of, you reap what you sow. And actually, shout out to my friend Rupert, whose band is doing very well at the moment. And it was a lyric from one of his songs. And it stuck with me because I was like, this is so true. And it's so simple. And at the time, it's just what the Bitcoin journey was all about, basically. It's like you go out, you learn this new thing, you have to find the information yourself, you got to dig around. And what comes out of that is really valuable. And I can't remember if this is exactly the timeline, but you basically sent me, we were already in conversation. I was looking for someone to help with the production of Bitcoin with Jake. And you then sent me this like huge GDoc with like all these different ideas.
I knew how to get my foot in the door, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting at. Yeah. And so it's like, so this would have been, I think, probably the very end of 2022 as a guess. I was about halfway through the Bitcoin with Jake experience when I hired you to come and help me do it. And I'd been previously like, I wasn't posting video. I was just chucking up literally whatever I'd recorded. I was writing all the show notes myself. And what people don't realize is it's actually a huge amount of work that goes in on the backside of producing podcasts.
Well, anyway, can I interrupt for 1 second? Because it's a huge amount of work if you want to actually take care and if you want to please your viewers.
Yeah.
There's a lot of podcasts out there that just blast it out. The description, just like copy paste and like lowercase, like just slam some stuff in there and like whatever, boom, send it. You know, the subtitles, I see so many clips and
they're the wrong subtitle.
Marketing podcasting where they just use the base AI subtitles. They don't go in and make any changes and things like that. So, you know, you could make a podcast with very minimal effort. You might get somewhere, but I know you're the type and I'm the type to really want to like put some value in there.
That's not how that word's spelled. Oh, that's literally, okay. A computer
puts you off the whole thing.
And you're like, oh, they're not actually really paying attention to what they're saying.
Yeah.
Or at least that's how I would look at that.
Well, I see it as they don't care about that piece of content.
Ah, yeah. Okay, cool. And so you reap what you sow is proving to be true, because in this newer iteration of my podcast journey, you alongside Michael are helping me hugely to put the shorts together, to produce the actual long form. So for people out there who don't know who you are and don't have a clue what it takes to produce a podcast, teach us a bit about like what actually goes into to make it all happen and why it interests you.
Okay, so what's involved and why I stick around?
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say that there's a fair amount of work that you do, Jake, yourself. You do the research, you find these people, you have a bit of a chat with them, you sweet talk them a little bit, you get them into the...
So, what's your name?
And, you know, the little email either side of that and whatnot. So I'm not saying it's all down to myself and Michael, but in terms of my work, you know, I get the raw podcast episode, cleaning up, making sure there's nothing egregious in there, you know, cutting out all your swearing, Jake.
Don't cut it out.
And really putting care and effort into it. Sometimes people's microphones are really horrible. People's microphones have that S that's just such a sharp, powerful S. You have to get in there. You have to edit that S out. And I really pride myself on ease of listening, because that's what I appreciate. And I think the listeners appreciate that as well. So on top of that, there's also the marketing clips that I put together. I think it's the most fun part of the job. And I'd love it if people really jumped on those, because I see it as like, there's the episode with the full information, the full content, all of the value. And then there's these clips that are kind of like little teasers, little bits of entertainment that have value in them as well. That's a whole other side of editing. That's video editing, which is, yeah, quite a learning curve. Quite an expertise in itself. Not that I have any expertise in it, but I'd like to one day. And so why I like sticking around is down to the content, I would say. You know, I'm deep diving on all of these episodes. I feel like I'm really soaking in all of this information. I mean, don't test me right now, but...
You'd be learning a massive amount. Yeah.
Easily over 100 podcasts edited by now, probably 150.
Which is also some of the other work you've done for other people.
Correct. Yeah.
Because I probably just ticked over, well, with Bitcoin with Jake and some of the other projects I've been involved, I'm probably about 150 podcasts now.
Yeah.
Something like that. Gosh, wow. I mean, Pat, yeah, basically no one's listened to me more. So thank you. Perhaps you could just teach people some of the different tools that you're using to actually do it. So the recording software I use is Riverside. Once I've clicked record, I share a link with Pat. Where does it then go? What are some of the high-level brands or something you could mention that get used in order to produce what we do?
Yeah, sure. So this is for a podcast that's fairly well equipped, I would say. You know, I know what I'm doing in these tools. If I was to pick up as a beginner this tool called Premiere Pro, Adobe Premiere Pro, oh my God, I'd be so overwhelmed. Like the tutorials to do the most basic things would probably be 10 minutes. So I wouldn't say that's for everybody, but Premiere Pro is where I do the actual audio editing. Or, you know, sometimes the guest says, hey, I want to take out that mention of such and such, someone's name or a place of business.
Yeah, company or something, yeah.
Or even...
a child's even, you know, name or a place, yeah.
Yeah, or even some sort of hiccup. Like sometimes there's a Wi-Fi outage or like once your power dropped out.
Yeah.
And so I had to like cut out the bits where... I think it was JP was talking to himself and then you came back, but it was a bit frozen.
It was Chris Pavlesic. Yeah. My Wi-Fi died and I like, yeah. Oh, I was about 55 minutes in. We were almost finished, but it's like cliffhanger.
So there's all sorts of things that come up that you could do yourself, Jake, but that's come down to be my job. And another tool that I use, which people might want to look into if they're interested in podcasting, is called Descript. And essentially it creates a transcript of the whole conversation. And so you can read through the podcast. And as you're reading, you can backspace words, you can move things around, and it will edit the video at the same time. It's also got an audio waveform, so you can find any bits that need to be cut out and things like that.
Yeah, Descript's pretty cool. And that's why when you reference, obviously, that you're not just watching and listening, you're also reading, because you're literally editing like a GDoc as you go through Descript. Yeah, it's really cool, Pat. And something that obviously this podcast is about investing as like a wider subject and how you can invest into, like we've already discussed, your health. So dopamine is the one topic we've really looked into, but also, you know, financial returns and all the different areas I've talked about before. But one of the things I was very keen on as we went into this was that I am setting this business up myself. I'm the sole founder and shareholder, and I'm also willing to invest into it to build a team. And I enjoy the research process. I'm always listening to people, improving my own knowledge. I'm like, they would be a great podcast guest. Let's try and get them on. And I've got a huge database of names already with, you know, 400 potential episodes that I haven't yet done. It won't be that many, but you know, it's like I've got just every day I'm adding people to that list. And what I found that I didn't enjoy doing was basically what you and Michael helped me out with, which is like once it's recorded, there's then this whole palaver of like, you know, chopping bits out and improving the quality of it, getting it ready to actually publish. Then you've got to publish in all these different platforms. You've got to have the show notes together. There's lots of stuff to get done. But the investment to me was very clear. It's like you'd helped me so much with Bitcoin with Jake and also helped produce the Bitcoin Advisor podcast and the Bitcoin Mentor podcast. It was like, right, Pat's a shoo-in. I would love you to come and help me out. And when I met Michael as part of Bitcoin Mentor, he was already working on the What is Money show and was really sharp on like the more commercial side of it, perhaps. Like, how do we actually grow this thing? I was like, okay, cool. That'd be a really interesting person to have involved too. But inevitably, as a new thing, we've had to get to know each other and it takes time. But your video short forms, for example, like I can see them improving. And so you could go out there and you could like hire a video agency and you could say like, here's my long, you know, and I get contacted by people trying to syndicate content all the time.
Yeah, we should talk about that.
Yeah. But it's actually, to me, it's much better to make an investment in someone like yourself to build the skill set working with me to then grow this thing super long term. And I'm trying to think of like, you know, multi-year processes. And I hope that's come through from like a working with me perspective. But just for those out there listening, like obviously I look at making investments all the time. And for me, this is like the business side of things I'm investing into. And we're not making any revenue whatsoever. We're not even trying to. The first and foremost focus is a high quality podcast, which I don't think I could do on my own. And that's why I'm doing it. Does any of that resonate at all, Pat?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody should go check out the shorts.
Yeah.
Over on the YouTube channel, YouTube Shorts, because, I mean, they are fun.
Yeah, but it's that blending of B-roll footage, music, different clips. Maybe I could ask you this, like, how do you choose those clips? Is there a process that you put in, or what's the best way of doing it, do you think?
I mean, it might be a little bit too much for me to run through the entire process, but essentially you use a stock footage website. And there is a bit of searching around. That's probably the most time-consuming part of it.
Mm. What, to find a suitable clip for the words that are being spoken about? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I'll try and think of an example. Let's say we're talking about dopamine. There might be a clip of a brain spinning around on like some sort of nice glossy black background. And you might think, yeah, that's going to look really good. But A, it's a little bit tacky, and B, how am I going to weave it in with the rest of what I've got going on in this edit? So it is kind of a looking forward, looking back. Will this shot work with this one? No, because he's on the right-hand side and there's text in the background. So if I flip it horizontally, this text is going to be backwards. Or, you know, like this clip could be really good and I have some vision for it. Maybe it's one from yesterday was sun coming through the clouds, and it was going to be like some God rays and some sunshine, and it was going to be like the dawning of Bitcoin something. And I was trying to work with it, and it's like, nope, I can't key out the clouds, which is where you sort of point the program to remove a certain color and like colors that are similar to it. So I was trying to like keep the sunlight but get rid of the clouds, and it just was not working. And yeah, I had to give up on the clip.
Oh,
I had to go find something else. So that happens. The other thing that happens a lot And I think most people are aware of it. Most video editors are aware of it, is the issue of copyright footage and copyright imagery. If I wanted to find M2 Money Supply, some like company who specializes in charts and they have like the exclusive rights to this chart, I can't just screenshot that. They're going to come after us. So like, what am I going to use? I have to like find some proxy for the M2 Money Supply? No. Well, maybe I just need to find something different. And so there's always that issue. But, you know, it's fun because the phrase money printing comes up. So I look up on YouTube, money printing factory. And I just, that's mine. No, now. Like, I don't care about you guys.
It is interesting though. So do you think copyright, I mean, of course it's worth keeping in mind. It's fascinating. Absolutely. That you were thinking about that. And I honestly hadn't even crossed my mind when it comes to making the shorts. But when you're using something like Storyblocks and you get the B-roll footage from there, you've paid for it, haven't you?
Storyblocks is one of those exceptions because you have the subscription and Storyblocks has the rights to that image.
Yes.
So that's no problem. But things like...
But often we're talking about niche Austrian economic discussion topics that Storyblocks doesn't have that.
It can be difficult sometimes.
Or even dopamine. I mean, they might not have anything for that, right?
Yeah, you got to get creative. I mean, that's just part of the job, is thinking about look good visually. Yeah,
but
there are limitations.
Sorry, Pat, excuse me cut you off. The improvement in the shorts is evident to me. Well, again, it's about, I guess, like investment philosophy, but I'm not doing this to game YouTube's algorithm. Yes, that's an approach you can take. And yes, even yesterday, I clicked on some fucking bloke who was advertising about how many views he could get you on your shorts and how like you were, you know, suffering in the few hundred views area. But like, as soon as you start trying to play that game, it's not what this is about. This is really about like long-term investments and like how you can improve your life. And learning how to like game YouTube is not necessarily part of that, in my view, at least not for now. And I'm happy to be proven wrong, but that would be my current take. So what it's about is it's about packaging up interesting information in different formats. Yep, there's a 60-minute conversation. You can have it as audio or you can have it as video. You can have it on YouTube or you can have it on Twitter, whatever you choose. Or equally, like here's a minute-long excerpt of a big statement that's really helpful to think about. Or equally, as Michael's been doing, is drawing out those like maybe 8 to 12-minute-long clips and popping them on YouTube. Actually, people love those. I love them. Not necessarily about my own podcast, but I don't want to listen to 3 hours of conversation with some people. But what I would love to do is like, absolutely, give me the best 15 minutes out of that and I'll get through it. And that to me is really valuable. And so the picking and the choosing of the clips is, we're not doing it for YouTube, right? We're doing it because actually we think it's really interesting information. And I hope that given enough time, at least this is my strategy at this point, year one was just all about content. And in year two, we'll start to think about how we might make some money out of it. But I hope that comes across to the audience. And
and for anyone's
actually still listening.
Anyone out there is still listening. Good job.
Yeah. And thank you. You know, thank you for supporting, guys.
These things are teachable skills. Video editing, it's a teachable a learnable skill, as it were. Same with marketing. You just have to put in the hours. You're not born with these skills.
Well, that's the cool thing. I mean, I didn't know how to podcast 2 years ago. No, when 2022.
You must have listened to a lot of them, though.
I was a big consumer of content. Yes, absolutely. I think I did my first ever podcast appearance in 2018, and I was part of a tech accelerator in London called Entrepreneur First. You can find it somewhere. It's a video of me in person with one of the podcast hosts of that organization. The first time I did that, I loved it. Podcasting is absolutely awesome. I want to do more of it. And it's now 2025. So here we are, all those years later. It's always so interesting which touch points influence you in your decision making. And actually, that's interesting because that brings me on to what I wanted to ask you about, which is, okay, so you're helping me build the Jake Woodhouse podcast, which is highly influenced by Bitcoin, which I know you love. We have hung out in a number of different Bitcoin conferences over the last couple of years and got pissed together and had a great time. It was awesome fun.
Amazing fun.
Why are you even into Bitcoin in the first place? Just to kind of ask a bit of a genesis story in that sense. And what kind of skills did you have that helped you understand it?
Sure. So I mean, normally you start out with this question, don't you?
Like, I know, I normally do. It's taking a while longer to get there, but I always find it interesting to help people think through. There's just so many different people that get drawn to Bitcoin.
So in high school, I thought I wanted to be a writer. I thought I wanted to be writing films, writing video games, involved in something like that. And I eventually settled on a double degree in film and computer science. Very quickly realized that I am not going to be a programmer.
Wow.
You know, it was very obvious to me that everybody around me was so much more hardcore, so much more gifted, or so much more into it, so much more talented, trying so much harder. And I thought, okay, no, I'm not going to be a programmer, but I have all of these skills. So I was left with like this really creative side plus logical computer side. And so that film degree has kind of got me to where I am today with this podcast and the show. And the computer science degree really helped me understand Bitcoin from a what is it perspective. And that's a very different perspective to a why or a how.
Mm.
But the what was quite clear to me. And I could see this decentralized thing is not going to get stopped. It's going to function without anybody ever screwing something up and like fat thumbing a one instead of a zero. And I could get a grasp of how the Bitcoin mining worked and everything like that. And I thought it was just so beautiful. It kind of all, it's almost like I could picture how it worked. And I said, okay, that is the winner. Like, this was probably 10 years into Bitcoin's existence as well. Yeah. So what's that effect called the older it gets?
There's a few different ones I like, but the Lindy effect is probably the number one that I think.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that as the name of it. Yeah,
yeah.
The Lindy effect. So it was pretty well established by then. I didn't get a chance to, you know, throw in a helping hand creating it or anything. Mm. But
yeah, I am Satoshi.
So it could be easy for me to say it's digital gold or it's like the best functional money we've ever had. But I truly tell people and believe myself that it's ethical money. That's how I see it.
Cool.
It's a solution to a very big problem that people don't know we have. And I see it as kind of like the answer.
And so why is it important to you to help support building an ethical money?
Maybe that's a rabbit hole people need to dive down themselves. I'm not even sure how I would sum it up.
Well, just what does anything come to mind when I ask you that? Is there anything that had happened in your life that made you frustrated when you were using unethical money?
Yeah, being broke.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it was 2018. I had my first real job. I worked for Apple as a phone support person, which is God, which is a nightmare. That's wow. Another story in itself. So that was pretty stressful, but I was getting paid.
2018 is when you finished your degree?
No, I was working at Apple and I was doing university as well, two degrees. It wasn't 8 subjects at a time. I'll put everybody at ease there. But that's when I first started getting some money in 20. I was spending it like crazy at the time. 2019, I started seriously investing money. I got a different job that paid me slightly more. And I was putting all of my money into stocks and trying to pick some winners. You know, I think I had Microsoft at $100 US. I had CRISPR, which I watched, you know, 10x and then drop back down. I had a bunch of other ones that did really well. And at the same time, the 2019 bull run?
There would have been a bull run 2017 that crashed early 2018, and then 2020 there was another bull run.
So I'm thinking of 2020, and I started putting money into Bitcoin instead. So I kind of had the two going on. The stocks weren't performing very well. Everyone was so bullish about Bitcoin. It's going to go to 500K this cycle. Like, holy shit, everybody get on board. And just slowly started investing.
This is the super cycle, guys. I remember that. You know, Dan Held writing about the super cycle in what would have been early 2021, something like that.
I remember looking at that double top formation, you know, when it peaked, crashed, and then got back up there and then crashed again, and it went into the bear market.
Mm-hmm.
It had just done that second top, and I was like, to my family, I'm like, guys, that was the double top. We just hit the top of this cycle. And they're like, no, it's still going to 250,000.
Well,
and it didn't. Anyway, recently in 2023, I sold out of all my stocks and I put it all into Bitcoin.
Wow.
So I had made some really good investments. I tripled my money in like 3 years.
That's
brilliant. Thank you. Some losses, of course, some losers in there. IBM let me down. What are they doing over there?
Well, you have to make mistakes. It doesn't, there is no investor out there that's never lost money. And anyone that tells you that they are is lying.
I have lost money, but I don't think it was my fault. So maybe I'm yet to experience this phenomenon.
Really?
Yeah, my friend recommended
me. Well, I stand corrected then, mate. Well played.
Actually, IBM was kind of a loss, but technically it was like $50 in profit. So it wasn't actually.
Maybe we'll let you get away with that one. We'll give it.
I'm just worried it's coming up.
I'm aware of time, Pat. We normally shoot for an hour. Do you have a little extra time today?
I've got as much time as we need, Matt.
Okay, great. This is cool because it often happens this way. We've kind of done the conversation in reverse slightly today, but whatever. The decision to sell your equities and to buy Bitcoin, just run me through why you decided to do that.
I think it was a combination of feeling like I didn't have enough Bitcoin. And these rumors going around that the stock market's going to make a downturn, it's going to crash. Warren Buffett's pulling out all of his stocks, he's holding cash. Who else was it? Some of those really big old guys were saying like, no, I'm worried like the stock market's going to collapse. You know, the price to earnings ratios, all this sort of talk made me realize, no, these are too slow. And I need to just be in Bitcoin, which is the real choice to make.
And it's interesting as well because, you know, obviously when you're working behind the scenes as a producer for someone like myself who's doing deep dives into Bitcoin, you're getting paid by the hour as a consultant to help me out. But what is not necessarily in the job advert is like all of the investing knowledge that would have been picked up through that process, if that makes sense, which is a very nice kind of kicker on, you know, how you spend your time in a way. And in some senses, it's like that is such a brilliant use of time. It's like monetizing your skills at the same time as learning about something else that helps you put the money that you're earning into better places.
I see your angle on that, but I don't know if I would agree that that's my perspective.
Okay, please.
You know, my favorite episode of Bitcoin with Jake was one of the earlier ones, Lord Fussy Tour.
Yep.
Can you recall?
Yeah, absolutely.
You recall much about that? He was talking about they're going to have like 4 or 5 or 6 ASICs per household because Tonga has a very, very small population, but they've got a fuckload of money somehow. I can't quite remember. They're doing something. They were going to be geothermal powering from these volcanoes.
Maybe we'll have to get him on. We'll have to find out.
I think you should get him on again because it blew my mind. It was like the audio quality was so bad, but.
Yeah, from memory, why was that your favorite?
Stories like that, just things going on in the world more than like investing knowledge.
Okay.
Is what interests me.
That's what you've got as a benefit out of listening to these conversations.
So.
Okay. Yeah. And in some ways, I agree in that the information we use to make decisions can come from places that we didn't expect. So like, I want to learn about investing. You pick up an investing book. But actually, do you buy more Bitcoin, yes or no? Listening to a guy talking about how this ethical money can help his country become less dependent on international monetary organizations like the IMF and less dependent on places like China by selling natural resources that they already have using decentralized Bitcoin mining. And he was also very interesting about the fact that the GDP of Tonga was really very small, like a few hundred million a year, maybe let's call it, for example, 250 million a year. But most of that is remittance. And he spoke about an example where if you had a guy in Sydney sending money back to his relative in Tonga and they're sending using Western Union, the like 20%, 30% of the value of that $100 that gets sent disappears. By the time you also pay for a cab into town in Tonga, another $5, they're getting 50 out of 100 in the back pocket of the local. And that means that if you didn't have all those costs and friction as a country like Tonga and use Bitcoin and Lightning, then you could send 100 back, keep the 100, and the GDP of the country doubles. That was also really wild. Like monetizing stranded energy on an island with geothermal, epic, but also then the whole business model of the country changes because the payment infrastructure's improved. And so as niche as that conversation is, it's like, God, this thing Bitcoin really makes a lot of sense for a lot of people. And then you can make decisions because of that. Yeah, cool. That makes loads of sense to me. Oh, nice one, Pat. Thank you. And okay, so you just mentioned like being broke. So I know that this is not probably a very easy question to answer, but could you take me back to the moment you're referring to, like how it felt, and why does Bitcoin change that?
Okay. It's particularly annoying when you're at college. I was studying sort of on campus. So I was living with a bunch of people in student accommodation, and, you know, there was drinking every weekend. We all wanted to go out and do things. And I'd be like, oh, I ran out of money for the week, guys. Like, I'm not going to be there and stuff like that. So it is a bit of a FOMO situation. It is a bit of a, how am I going to get myself into the next 5 years if I'm not making any money situation. But, you know, there's jobs out there for people who are hungry for work, and it's just a matter of making the right decisions when you get that money. The biggest things I've ever purchased were a laptop and a computer. I really don't buy much else, don't buy fancy clothes or anything. So in that way, it was easy for me. I think if I was a shopaholic, I'd be a bit more under the pressure. But yeah, I can't think of any specific like moment I cracked or anything. It was just broke all the way through until 2018, and then things started to look a bit brighter.
And was that because you figured out that Bitcoin was how you wanted to save your money?
Not straight away. So I learned about it quite quickly thanks to my background. And I could see that it was, you know, primed to succeed. Everybody has to build their confidence, you know. I started out not really knowing how much of my total wealth should be in there, but then you start to learn, you know, a couple of podcasts later, and it became a much more serious thing. And I was the type to, you know, invest pretty much everything I could afford to.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise known as the DCA army that I've heard described before. It's like, okay, so Bitcoin, whatever price it's sitting at today, if it drops by 50%, there's still a whole lot of people out there that regardless of what the price is, every Monday when the paycheck comes through, and they've got some disposable income, they are buying. And it's like a wall of demand that, you know, you see it, Gary's Economics, who we've been hammering a little bit lately, who talked about, yeah, crypto going to zero. You're like, all right, mate, have you ever met someone that DCA'd into Bitcoin regardless of price? Like, come on, mate. Anyway, I've still open debate, Gary, if you want to talk about what is money, then, you know, myself are here to have that conversation, and Pat will be chopping it up with glee in the background. So Pat, I'd love to ask one last question, which is there anything else from like a more kind of investing perspective? So those companies that you own, for example, is there any other lessons that come to mind from that experience that you'd like to share, and the benefits of owning more Bitcoin than before, or not owning those shares?
The age old lesson of don't forget to take profit. That stung me a few times. I think it's important to not only say, how is this company performing? If we're talking about equities, how is this company performing today? But actually, is it going to be here doing anything good in 5 years? Is it going to hold up as one of these top companies? Because, you know, Facebook's still around somehow. It's doing something useful. Google kind of has their claws on the entire globe at the same time. So they're probably going to be around. But things like emerging technologies, I love looking at emerging science and emerging technologies, fusion technologies. Everybody out there could check out Fusion Industry Association on YouTube. They break down the fusion news, and it's very exciting.
Cool.
Different battery technologies, solar technologies, even though solar is kind of, I mean, we could debate about that. Solar is sort of questionable because the solar panels last like 5-10 years, and then you can't get rid of them. You can't recycle them, and they're not all that efficient. But the breakthroughs in environmental, I mean, I know you're very interested in clean tech and things like that. All those environmental initiatives are very interesting to me too. For me, it's not just, I know there's a lot of people out there like, I have to maximize, I have to get the maximum profit. And I do feel that, but I have a lot of the side of, I want it to be doing something good. I want to be contributing to a company that's actually doing something useful or beneficial for the world.
Awesome. It's funny as well to then think about the fact that, you know, as a producer of a podcast that's heavily focused on Bitcoin, there are still people out there that think Bitcoin has no value. Yet you're quite happy to sit there and say that you're working towards something that you kind of care about in that sense. And that is the information arbitrage. Like, people just think differently, or they haven't received the same bits of information that others have, and therefore making decisions around that can be very beneficial. I really like as well that idea of, 5 years from now, is this company still going to be doing something valuable? But I prefer to ask that about Bitcoin, actually. And it's like, well, 5 years from now, do I think this thing is going to still be here?
And 100% is my answer.
Absolutely, right? And that's why this kind of thing, oh, Bitcoin's going to zero. You don't have a fucking clue what you're talking about. Like, it's as simple as that. And it's this idea that, like, okay, if you've owned the Magnificent Seven, as they're so-called, basically a bunch of technology equities, the returns have been monster in some cases. And that's great for whoever, you know, speculated on those. And it's great if you consider them to still be creating value under the hood. But like, what's going to happen to those companies over the next 5 years? I don't know. And then you flip that around to then think about, like, well, hang on, you own a piece of a monetary network. And this is where your computer science background is so cool. You're actually able to think, like, what is this thing? Well, it's just a decentralized computing network that's bigger than it has ever been assembled before. And I love speaking to people like yourself that still support the network with all of those skills. Because it's like, okay, I'm not going to do a computer science degree, but I can buy the same thing as the person that has, in the knowledge that with all those skills, they looked at it and their due diligence says, yeah, green, let's go. I think that's always a fun thing for people to try and ask, like, 5 years from now, what's Bitcoin going to be doing? And therefore, you know, could you put your money into it? Okay, awesome. What a great catch up today. Thank you very much. I'm going to leave it there. And I'm going to, just as a final point, it's kind of where we started, but I didn't know where Bitcoin Podcast was going to take me. I still don't know where it's going to take me to some extent, but you've been probably the most important person behind the scenes helping me get this far. So I couldn't appreciate you more. And I'm really excited to build what we build with this podcast. So thank you so much for everything. Really appreciate it.
Jake, much love to you, man. It's been a great road. I've really enjoyed it. And if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here. So I'm going to turn the table straight back on you.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Pat, so much for your time. And obviously anyone who's interested in learning about what Pat does or whatever, reach out and, you can find him. We'll put you in the show notes. Or you can put yourself in the show notes.
You can find some interesting tweets of mine at tricky_BTC on X.
Awesome. Well, Pat, thank you so much for your time today.
Jake, it was amazing. It was fun. Cheers.